Good morning, everyone. We welcome you today to our Sunday morning roundtable discussion on November 29th, 2020. So glad you could be with us today. We are recording from the Plainfield Christian Science Church Independent, Plainfield, New Jersey, the United States of America. And we will begin with our morning prayer.
Good day, everyone. I'm reading from No and Yes, page 30. God's law is in three words: I am all. And this perfect law is ever present to rebuke any claim of another law. It is truth's knowledge of its own infinitude which forbids the genuine existence of even a claim to error. This knowledge is light, wherein there is no darkness, not light holding darkness within itself. The consciousness of light is like the eternal law of God, revealing Him and nothing else. Mary Baker Eddy.
Thank you. Watching point.
Watch number 218. Watch lest when animal magnetism suggests that it's becoming more powerful and aggressive, you neglect to build up your consciousness of God's infinite power to correspond with this seeming increase in the lie. One must continuously carry the recognition of truth as able and adequate to overthrow error of any sort or magnitude. In Nehemiah 1:5, why does he call God terrible? Perhaps that was his effort to build up his recognition of God's almightiness and power to overthrow the lie, no matter how big it claimed to be. As the claims of animal magnetism enlarged to their own destruction, he wanted to be sure that his sense of God's power was proportionately increasing. End quote.
Thank you. Okay, comments for that.
Well, I've learned here that the only power the lie has is what we have, what we give it. It has no power of its own. Only God has the only power. And as we turn from the lie or know that it has no power, and God has all power, we can't have two thoughts going at the same time. You're either holding on to the lie or you're knowing God's power. And anyway, God is omnipotent. His power is greater than the lie because the lie is what we make of it. And when we turn from it, it's nothing.
Thank you. That is the really basic truth in science. And it was one, it took a long time for me to learn that. I can remember the very day I thought, oh my gosh, God is all. I don't have anything to be afraid of. It just came on me. And that was after years. I mean, I could probably give you the year that happened. But I'd been in science a long time before I could grasp that wonderful, wonderful truth. And it's what Florence read and what she wrote in her forum comment. God's law, I am all. There's nothing outside of Him. And if there seems to be, we have given it that suppositional power, which is not a power, it's just a false belief.
And it reminded me of in Science and Health, where Mrs. Eddy reminds us that the higher truth lifts her voice, the louder error screams. So we shouldn't be afraid of it. It's just trying to equal the power of the truth present.
So, yes. Yes. And then, that finally it's inarticulate sound.
It's silence.
In oblivion forever. Yes.
Yeah. And that's, and you should always remember that the devil can't actually do something to you. And it can only suggest things to you. It can only try to persuade you to do things to yourself. when, you know, when Jesus was in the wilderness being tempted. You know, the devil couldn't throw him off the cliff. It could only suggest that he throw himself off the cliff. The devil comes to us to suggest things to us, to try to get us to think that what it's suggesting to us is good for us somehow, or attractive somehow. And that is what Mrs. Eddy calls hypnotism or animal magnetism.
I used to not like this lesson so much, and now it's one of my very favorites. It's just always so helpful to get into this truth. And in the lesson in Science and Health, twice it says, once on page 568, every mortal at some period here or hereafter must grapple with and overcome the mortal mind belief in a power opposed to God. And then again, I guess it's on that same, on the next page. Every mortal must learn that there is neither power nor reality in evil. So it's something that we all must learn. Again, on 102, mankind must learn that evil is not power. So-called despotism is but a phase of nothingness. Christian Science despoils the kingdom of evil and preeminently promotes affection and virtue in families and therefore in the community. It's over and over and over again, a basic law principle of Christian Science. And I will tell you now, I don't care what your problem is, or how long it's been going on, or how deeply entrenched, or whatever, it is all coming from a belief that there is a power apart from God. And if you can get there, you will be released from the bondage of that belief. So you work at it. Do what I did. Keep at it. And then suddenly there'll be this wonderful dawning. And you might say the words, but unless you really believe it and know it and goes deep down within you, it's not effective. The words are, you know, the words are a starting point, but it's got to be deep within you.
If we also love the truth of the word, the truth that it's saying, I think that's what that helped me along the way. Like, I began to, it's something I got to love. I was so grateful. I think the gratitude first, and then it starts to really mean and feel something. Otherwise, it was just words.
Right.
Right. You gotta get to where you really know that God is terrible. No, without a doubt. But I mean, think about it. Think of what the false beliefs, how aggressive they are, and you know, they use the television to influence you. They use the internet now to try to influence you. They're making all kinds of suggestions to influence you. Mary was just reading Dr. Fauci. We're going to have a dark Christmas.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
What a lovely prediction. I turned on the TV for 1 second, and there he was. I said, oh, brother, turn it off.
The devil can't make you have a dark Christmas. Yeah. It can only suggest to you that you're going to. You either buy it or you tell it where to go.
I think that's why the teaching that to have the discipline or cultivate the discipline of, if something is not good, immediately to know it's not of God, it's animal magnetism. That's very helpful, because I've found that otherwise it got me to do its work. Then I would be repeating the error. Oh, I have a headache. Oh, yeah. Oh, goodness. You know, so I'm doing its work. It just suggested it to me, but I take over and do its work instead of immediately rejecting it and knowing God's love and presence.
Thank you.
Yeah. It goes back, you know, the story that Kara said a few weeks ago about the devil chasing the man, and the man was so afraid, and then the devil catches up and And what are you going to do to me?
Oh, it's your dream.
It's your dream. Whatever you want to dream, go ahead. I'm here for you, boy. So let's not dream that dream. That's the Adam dream. And all the things that we see going on that are of ungodlike, it's the Adam dream. And don't. If you were to see someone on the couch having a bad dream or dreaming, you wouldn't jump in there with him. Hopefully you wouldn't.
You wouldn't jump into the dream.
No. Wake him up.
You would wake him up. And that's what we're in the business, not of being part of that dream, but waking up the dreamers.
This is what he says a lot. Rouse yourself.
Rouse ye. Face the foe. Yes. So our subject, ancient and modern necromancy, alias mesmerism and hypnotism denounced. And I love this golden text, Lillian. You want to?
Blessed are they that do his commandments, that they may have right to the tree of life, and may enter in through the gates into the city. For without are dogs and sorcerers and whoremongers and murderers and idolaters, and whosoever loveth and maketh a lie.
This is why we stay out of the Adam dream, folks. Because that's what you're going to find. And it might be appealing maybe even for a moment, you think, and then whoops, it's not. So let's stay in the gates of the city, the New Jerusalem. And I wanted to, Parthens, in his forum, he spoke to the Thanksgiving lesson. And I was extremely touched by particularly this part of the lesson, the very end of the Bible, and then the definition of salvation in science and health. And he speaks to the fact that it's really what Florence mentioned about having gratitude toward God, loving God. So the 91st Psalm, because he hath set his love upon me, therefore will I deliver him. Because he hath set his love upon me, I will set him on high. Because he has known my name. Because he hath set his love upon me, he shall call upon me, and I will answer him. Because he hath set his love upon me, I will be with him in trouble. Because he hath set his love upon me, I will deliver him. And because he hath set his love upon me, I will honor him. Because he hath set his love upon me, with long life I will satisfy him. And because he hath set his love upon me, I will show him my salvation. It's just so beautiful to me. It's so, oh my goodness. And then the definition of salvation, Gary?
Salvation. Life, truth, and love understood and demonstrated as supreme over all. Sin, sickness, and death destroyed.
Think of all that God does for us when we love him. There's nothing he doesn't do. And you see, part of my problem was my old theology who feared God. And it took me a long time to get past being afraid of him and learning to love him, because in old theology, you are taught, yes, he is a terrible God, a God of wrath, and if you don't do right, you'll get, you know, knocked down or whatever. And even my mother, she used to say that about the South, and she was, you know, Presbyterian, and she thought in the North people had it too easy. She said, down South, you didn't do right, you'd get struck by lightning or a black widow. Or anyway, it used to terrify me when she told me that. But and she didn't mean to terrify me. That was just kind of what her belief was at that point. And it's taint so honey, as we know, it's not the truth. God is not a wrathful God, and there's nothing you could do that could cause him to turn on you in any way. He's love with a capital L. So it just as the sun shines, God loves. You don't have to try to please him or do anything, really. But it's of your benefit when you learn what he is, when you learn to love him. And as Florence said originally in the beginning, to have gratitude for him. Then you become receptive to this sun that's pouring out all his love and great goodness to you, just as the end of that psalm said. He never withholds. We withhold it from ourselves. So, all right, I thought it was a very wonderful responsive reading as well, and can apply to our government. The Lord hath broken the staff of the wicked and the scepter of the rulers. You have to, again, it's not God, but if you're not doing what you should, how hath the oppressor ceased, the golden city ceased. So, and then, Karen, what you wrote about, for the Lord of hosts hath purposed, and who shall disannul it, and his hand is stretched out, and who shall turn it back? Go ahead.
Okay, I saw, can you hear me? Sometimes I don't know whether I've been muted or not.
Yes, we can hear you.
Okay, so Barnes' commentary says about that, who shall disannul it? Who has power to defeat his purposes? Difficult as they may be in appearance, and incredible as their fulfillment may seem, yet his purposes are formed in full view of all the circumstances, and there is no power to resist his arm or to turn him aside from the execution of his designs. By this assurance, God designed to comfort his people, and by the same consideration, his people may be comforted at all times. His plans shall stand. None can disannul them. No arm has power to resist him. None of the schemes formed against him shall ever prosper. Whatever ill, therefore, may befall his people, however thick and gloomy and sad their calamities may be, yet they may bear the reassurance that all his plans are wise, and that they all shall stand, no matter how many or how mighty may be the foes of the church, or how self-confident may be their leaders. They have no power to resist God. If their plans are in his way, they will be thrown down. Who can stand against God? And who can resist the execution of his will? And then I gave two citations from the lesson. God is omnipotent, supreme. Mankind must learn that evil is not power. There is no power apart from God.
So that's it. And we can stand firm in that, and that's where we have confident expectancy of good, which is a definition of patience. I spoke to it Wednesday night, the power of a right idea. Power of a right idea is God working, and it will be brought forth. And in that statement, Mrs. Eddy said, you know, holding that right thought in consciousness will cause it to manifest itself. And that's what a good watch does. That's what we do here. And it's not hocus pocus. This is God. It's not human will. It's God working.
As was brought out in the readings Wednesday, this is a divine power.
Yeah, so.
So don't try to stand in its way.
Yeah.
Don't try, right?
Don't try. And it's working now. Go ahead.
I think of Mrs. Eddy M., Mother's Evening Prayer. She speaks of God as, oh, gentle presence, peace and joy and power.
Yes.
Gentle presence, life divine that owns each waiting hour. The love that guards the nestling, faltering flight, keep thou my child on upward wings tonight. I love that.
Thank you.
Yes, and that love and that gentle presence is a law of annihilation to everything unlike itself.
Nobody in their right mind would want to resist that.
Exactly.
Just don't try, that's all. I mean,
don't try. Because if you do, it's not good. It's not good. And it's like hitting your head on the wall. It's going to really hurt till you stop.
So. But that's divine justice, right? Mm-hmm. Isn't that the design of love? That's how the sinner gets reformed.
Exactly.
And Florence, I'll let you speak to this as well, because this is truly the premise of our ancient and modern necromancy, alias mesmerism, hypnotism, denounced, what you wrote on the forum.
a moment. Yeah, I just, it's, well, now, it took me a long time too, but now I know that truly there is no power apart from God. For me to think that there's anything else apart from God, it just doesn't make sense. So I was saying that when people go to fortune tellers, witch doctor, material medical, or anything else, it is because they either know not God or they do believe that is because wherever they went, that is where the power is. I'm grateful that I now clearly realize that anything I allow to disturb my thinking is something I still believe has more power than God. And this is why Mrs. Eddy in Science NL has given us all these. First, there is no power apart from God. Omnipotence has all power, and to acknowledge any other power is to dishonor him. Then it says, no power can withstand divine love. The power of Christian Science and divine love is omnipotent. It is indeed adequate to unclasp the hold and to destroy sin, disease, and death. And then it says also, what God cannot do, man need not attempt. And then the Bible, as well as Mrs. Eddy's other writings, have endless statements about God's omnipotence, omnipresence, omniscience, and omniaction. The simple statement, is there anything above God's head? That's from Dorothy Rieke's Wonderful Things Are Happening, is a real quick reminder. And then I said, is it not wise then to spend enough time making our own in order to be aware consistently of the supremacy of our ever-present God? Other systems may heal physically, while God alone heals both physically and morally. Should we even begin to think about the costs involved in other systems? Let's not forget this law. I am all.
Thank you. You know, I've known people in their past, maybe not having a great understanding of science at that time, who have gone to what those tarot places or whatever, had things told to them, and then they live in total fear about it.
Yeah.
So it's an abomination to the Lord is what the lesson says. And I looked up that word abomination. Object of extreme hate, defilement, pollution, evil doctrines and practices, vile, wicked, morally wrong. So all those things that Lawrence mentioned in the lesson, stay away. Do not, no. And as we've talked about, you know, we see them more and more. Every town seems to have a little tarot card thing or something else. Does every town have a church? It's better. It should.
So we have them here, but we also have the tarot readers also.
Well, so that's true here as well. We do have the churches, and we also have the tarot card readers. And so you stay away from it. Don't even be tempted at all.
I like that thought, that definition of it being pollution. That's the way it feels when, you know, some of these beliefs come on, like you got smog in the head, you know. So
yeah. And you know, I work about it. Get thee hence, Satan. Every time I pass that little store, that's what I say to myself. Get thee hence, Satan. You have no place here. You can't prosper here. You can't prosper anywhere because you're not of God. You're godless. But when people don't have a right sense of God, then they flounder, and that's why they turn to it. So, and this is why it's so important to instill in your children God, so they are not tempted by these other things.
But so, the other thing, what a contrast, though. They're always telling you what's in the future, even if the next day is something in the future, when eternal now is what we are learning to be, live with, you know, the present.
Yes. So true. So Yeah, so we stand strong there and aren't in any way tempted. And we know, I mean, I have learned, and I didn't know this for a long time, I've known this more recently, that Hitler and all of that went on there, he practiced the dark, what's it called, the dark arts. Even that quote, you know, if you tell a person a lie, I don't know, that was in Hitler or someone, Stalin or someone else, if you tell a person a lie often enough, they'll believe it. That's why the media, which we can call the false prophet, you turn off Dr. Fufu and everyone else. You don't listen to it. It's a form of mass hypnotism. They keep repeating it.
Keep repeating the lies, hoping that you will believe them. But Jesus came to sift the chaff from the wheat. And that is what we must do mentally. Sift the chaff from the wheat. And cast off the chaff. And keep the wheat.
Yes.
This is why God told the Israelites, when they entered the promised land, to destroy everything else. Destroy it. You can't be nice to a false belief. Because it's not going to be nice to you.
Yeah, and that's why we can't compromise our Christianity. You know, you can't mix it. And this, oh, we must be loving. Well, to that I say a few things. and you see, it turns the Christianity love and everything. So it's accepting of things that we shouldn't accept. That's just plain foolishness. That's not divine wisdom. That's stupidity.
Love where there is no love.
Oh, peace. Yeah. And where there is no peace. Yeah, and love where there is no love. If I be lifted up, all men to me. You raise the standard, but you don't go down to that level accepting other fragmentary beliefs, which was also in the lesson about semi-metaphysics. Joe spoke to it, and also we had someone new who wrote in from the Baltimore area, and she says the roundtable discussion, this was from last week, was meaty and inspiring. I was really moved by the quote, 6 days of revelation by Mary Baker Eddy from 257 regarding fragmentary ideas and how all religions have some good in them and cautioning all to leave the fragments alone as science is the divine whole. And then it said she felt it was in the lesson again with that citation. In this, the final struggle for supremacy, semi-metaphysical systems afford no substantial aid to scientific metaphysics, for their arguments are based on the false testimony of the material senses, as well as on the facts of mind. These semi-metaphysical systems are one and all pantheistic and savor pandemonium, a house divided against itself. So, we don't want to mix with the false systems and think we're being loving. We lift the false systems out and above to the truth. And, and Joanne, she said pandemonium defined as the abode of all demons. How about that, my friends?
But this idea of tolerating false beliefs, we love people, but we don't tolerate false beliefs. And that's the important distinction. Because tolerating false beliefs really is a form of suicide. Think about it. Either individually or as a nation. To tolerate false beliefs is a form of suicide. You don't want to go there. Yes, we love God's creation, but we do not tolerate the false beliefs.
It's very important to understand that. We talk about it all the time because people, we must be loving. Well, this is a supreme love. You love people, and if you want really love the people, you're going to release them from the false systems. But it doesn't mean we love the false systems and all the error that goes on and that we're going to compromise ourselves with those false systems. That is utter foolishness and worse. And that's not love. And Mrs. Eddy makes that really clear. And there are many false systems out there right at this moment, and they're demonic. The definition of pandemonium, the abode for demons, great. So we don't need any, we don't need that. We need, it's what the golden text said. We stay in the city of Jerusalem. We don't go out to the other and Adam
some,
dream.
And some of them are quite aggressive. They're not even trying to be subtle anymore.
Yeah.
And it's not to, it's not that we fear them or that they are becoming more powerful. They are coming to the surface to be destroyed. And that is what we as Christian Scientists need to stick with. These false beliefs, whatever they call themselves, false religions, false government systems, false whatever.
Witchcraft, which we are told has been on the rise.
They are coming to the surface to be destroyed. And the only thing that's going to destroy it is the truth. And that is our job.
And there's great safety and peace and joy in this. You see clearly, there's never anything to fear. Remember my aha moment when I realized God is all. So there's nothing to fear, but everything to rejoice in as we do this work. Now, it's interesting. You know, someone was saying at just the forum, comments are so wonderful, and they are. Someday we're going to probably make a book about them. And so you picked up on the two different stories in the lesson, both dealing with rebukes, by the way. So Linda, the first one, and explain briefly what happened in that one.
The first story, I believe, is with the child that has the lunacy.
The lunatic.
Yeah.
Sore vexed.
Right. Enjoying himself in the fire. And
yes. And the disciples couldn't cure him.
I also love what I think it was Carrie added.
Yes.
About that, but I guess you'll get to that. But I found in Divinity Course, the Blue Book, something Mrs. Eddy wrote that just really spoke to me, just with this belief of lunacy. Shall I read it?
Yes.
Okay. It says, quote, "Jesus healed the young man then and there, and he neither prayed nor fasted as men interpret those words today. Is it not reasonable to suppose, therefore, that the fasting, denial, meant the denial of the reality of any such thing as fits or lunacy, and that the prayer meant the affirmation of the all-presence and the all-power of God, wherein there is no possibility of either fits or lunacy? These are the essential features in Christian Science prayer of today." I just love that. No room for fits and lunacy.
Yes, and then go ahead with the second quote.
Okay. Quote, and this is from Miscellany by Mrs. Eddy. Quote, "When the disciples asked him why they could not heal that case, Jesus, the master metaphysician, answered, 'Because of your unbelief, lack of faith,' and then continued, 'If ye have faith as a grain of mustard seed, ye shall say unto this mountain, remove hence to yonder place, and it shall remove.' Also he added, 'This goeth not out but by prayer and fasting, refraining from admitting the claims of the senses. Be patient, O Christian Scientist. It is well that thou canst unloose the sandals of thy master's feet.'" End quote.
Thank you.
Can I add, I looked up Nehemiah from the quote that we read this morning from watching and prayers, 500 watching points. And I looked down, and right before he calls God terrible, he had just found out about the walls, gates were burned down, and there was affliction, and Jerusalem was falling. And then he says right here, "And then it came to pass when I heard these words that I sat down and wept and mourned certain days and fasted and prayed before the God of heaven. And then he says, and said, I beseech thee, O Lord of heaven, the great and terrible God, that keepeth covenant and mercy for them that love him and observe his commandments. I just think that was not a coincidence. That was really.
Yes, thank you.
Science is absolute and best understood through the study of my works and the daily Christian demonstration thereof. It is their materiality that clogs the progress of students. And this kind goeth not forth by prayer and but by prayer and fasting. It is materialism through which the animal magnetizes preys and in turn becomes a prey. Spirituality is the basis of all true thought and volition. Assembling themselves together and listening to each other amicably or contentiously is no aid to students in acquiring solid Christian science. Experience and, above all, obedience are the aids and test of growth and understanding in this direction. With love, Mary Baker Eddy.
Thank you. It's a materialism in students that the animal magnetism preys on. You know, there's some people who are easily healed and there are others that don't seem to be. And I was one, so I'm not saying this is in a critical way, but if your materialism, your unbelief, whatever it is within you, it's hard to reach until those walls get broken down. And we are approaching this very materialistic time in our world to some. This Christmas tide, which should be a very holy, sacred time. And so we make sure we keep ourselves in the love of God. This is why we sent the Liberator out with Christ in Christmas. That was Mrs. Eddy's answer to the materialism at that time. So you are not preyed upon by animal magnetism. And I found it very interesting because Carrie had found in her research on this story about the disciples, that these disciples had gone off and they were doing other things, having, you know, they weren't staying in gear, so to speak. And that is really why they were unable to do the healing work needed to be done. They weren't, what does Mrs. Eddy say? Never absent from your post. Never off guard, never ill-humored, never unready to work for God. This is obedience. And so this is what we must...
This is the state of mind.
The state of mind that we live in.
We have to keep ourselves in. And it's a discipline. But it's a safety. And it's a privilege.
Yeah.
And it's a joy when you do it.
Willingly,
exactly. Yeah. Well, if you're not willingly doing it, you're not doing it,
yeah.
Right? I mean, we do what we really want to do in life.
Well, I think that's why you can't tolerate, you know, all the bad, the wrong thinking and everything, is because God made us to express his qualities, to do what he wanted. And the fact that people are out there not doing it means that they don't have their purpose. And I, for one, after coming here, having found my purpose, I love it. I want everybody to feel that. It's wonderful. So
it makes all the difference when you get that purpose going. Otherwise, you know, what's it all about, Alfie, is that song. But Carrie quotes from the Gill exposition of the entire Bible. It seems that Christ not only suggests that faith was greatly wanting in his disciples, for which reason they could not cast out the devil and heal the lunatic, but they had been waiting in prayer to God to assist them in the exercise of their miraculous gifts, and that whilst Christ and the three other disciples were on the mount, they had been feasting and indulging themselves with the people, and so were in a very undue disposition of mind for such extraordinary service, for which the Lord rebukes them. Lord, meaning Christ Jesus, rebukes them. So here, three of his disciples, and he were on the mount in a very exalted state, and the other disciples were not. This is what we talk about, keeping your violin in tune, and not getting into that materiality of the world. It is a discipline. And frankly, all that's going on now with this nameless nothing has been a great discipline for many people who like to party and do travel and do all this stuff all the time and have taken no time for God Almighty.
For prayer and fasting.
For prayer and fasting. And then Carrie also made an interesting, she compares this story to the story of, the father believes. It says, in Mark, there's an important dialogue between Jesus and the father of the boy regarding faith, but no mention of the mustard seed. So this was a different story, but the father says he believes, but asks Jesus for help as to his unbelief. Because he entertains a grain of belief, like the grain of the mustard seed, Jesus destroys the affliction from which the boy suffers. And then, I am glad to finally understand the context of the mustard seed teaching. The small amount of faith held by the father seemed greater than that of the disciples. So please don't tell me all about, you know, as I've said, all how you've studied science all your life and everything, that all that kind of thing. It's where is your heart? Where is your heart? I thought that was a very interesting kind of a comparison, because the disciples had been traveling and being with Christ Jesus, and yet there was still a lot of materiality in there, so they were unable to gather themselves up together to heal that person.
They may have thought, oh, we're special, we're already here.
Yeah. while that other, the father of the son, had been in such great need and was so love of the Christ, gratitude for the Christ, the healing was instantaneous.
And faith in the Christ.
Yes, faith in the Christ.
That's the danger of that. Oh, I'm a Christian Scientist, and then quote for years.
Yes.
That means too much.
My goodness, yes. So, and in both the cases, the next healing was of the unclean spirit. And Jesus rebuked him. And Carrie wrote about Jesus rebuked him, checking his insolence, despising his flattery, and refusing to receive a testimony from him, which he wanted not, lest it should be thought he had a familiarity and confederacy with him. He said, hold thy peace and stop thy mouth. I need no such witness as thine, nor thy praises. I am not soothed by that flattery, nor is my mouth to be stopped or power restrained by such methods. Wherefore, he adds, come out of him. I will not let thee alone. So, I will give a testimony of who I am by the dispossessing of thee out of this man. And maybe that was his unclean spirit. His materiality is, you know, trying to flatter and get his way by flattering in other ways. But Jesus was having none of it. And in both instances, he rebuked, and that definition, to silence, to heal, to restrain, to calm. But it must be done, especially in dealing in situations like this. First, of course, you rebuke the error in yourself when error talks. Get thee behind me, Satan. You don't listen. You rebuke it. And again, in Science and Health 452, these are words written in, carved in stone in the Mother Church extension over the reader's platform. When error confronts you, withhold not the rebuke or the explanation which destroys error. Never breathe an immoral atmosphere unless in attempt to purify it. So, are you doing that to yourself in your daily walk? And this is why all these, I don't know, maybe none of you take part in any of this, but all those Christmas parties and other things, are you ready to go into that atmosphere and rebuke it? Because most likely it's going to need it. This is very important. Jesus' rebukes were what?
Fearful.
Fearful. This was the side of science I had not seen until I met Mrs. Evans. I'd never seen this side. It's all God is love. We must be loving. Well, true, but you have to have that sword in hand. Or, because believe me, I tried that other thing. It didn't work, just being loving all the time. It was not work. It does not work. So, but having that sword does work. And again, it's not about people. It's about the error. We're not being mean and cruel to people, but boy, that error, we have a right to just smack it down and destroy it.
And when it blesses one, it blesses all. We destroy the error out of love for the person that is exhibiting it.
Yes.
Right? That's how you discipline a child. That's how we discipline one another. And that's how we should be willing to accept the discipline in ourselves.
And I thought it was wonderful in the lesson where Mrs. Eddy says, the hypnotist dispossesses the patient of his individuality in order to control him. That's what's happening to you when you're watching the hypnotic box of the television. You're getting dispossessed of your individuality because you're no longer thinking for yourself. You're just taking up all this other stuff.
Dangerous.
Very, very dangerous. That's why we must have our individual rights. Must be able to think freely, worship freely. Some of us here watched the pilgrims again, part of it anyway, how they came over, what they were in pursuit of, and how important it was, primitive Christianity. Now, Susan wrote of a very important point. We're running out of time a bit, but maybe she could tell us a little bit. She's here, right?
Yes.
And also, Florence, your response.
I've been thinking a lot about the Fruitage chapter in Science and Health, and I often turn to it because the testimonies in there are really amazing. They're just results of reading Science and Health and cures of diseases that physicians completely said they couldn't do anything with. And I've often wondered why I or anyone else would have any doubt that this science is the truth. And I've been thinking about it in regards to the pandemic that seems to be right now, and this miracle drug or vaccination that's coming out. A lot of people have been saying, oh, great, now I can get on with my life and go on vacation again, that type of thing. But I think that they're missing this wake-up call, really, which is that these drugs don't solve the problem. It's one belief replacing another belief. And people have said that pandemics occur every 100 years or so. So that's kind of proof that the belief might be covered up for a while, but a new one is produced because the disease itself isn't being handled by the truth.
Thank you. Yes. And, I mean, in some ways it's almost like a cleansing. All these things that happen when people are disobedient. And so it's just a reason more to cling steadfastly to God and to his idea and rise above it. And it is also why we must pray that with this vaccine, people have the right to not take it. It's not going to be one of these where we take it. We're going to have to end now, Ingrid. I'm sorry. I wanted Florence to finish with her quote on vaccine, and then we're ending.
Sure. I said that there is only one permanent answer to all human woes. It is the Christ truth of life in spirit God. And Mrs. Eddy gave us a beautiful response about this vaccination. It says on page 269, regarding vaccination, there is only the mental vaccination. I would take the point of spirit, which is truth, and prick the human affections, then inoculate with divine love, circulating the system of thought, and the liability of contagious disease, sin, or sickness will cease. Perfect, I said, and that would not break the bank in the least.
Thank you. And that's what we'll work with. That's a wonderful definition, and that's the true vaccine. And we as scientists will rise above this, that there's this miracle that has the answer. God is our physician. He has the answer. And we're going to end with the first edition, which Mrs. Eddy called her precious volume. It's a little more rougher and plain speaking than our current one, but very good, some of it.
And this is from page 107. In an age of sin and sensuality, hastening to greater development of power, 'tis fearful to consider the influence of belief without more honesty and understanding to steer clear of the fearful shoals on this dangerous and unexplored coast. The peril of Salem witchcraft even is not past until that error be met by the understanding and destroyed. Not the gallows, but explanation destroys error. Science must be allowed to explain this phenomenon of belief in contradistinction to that of truth and intelligence controlling man. An evil and artful mind is all the Satan there is. And this is the fallen angel or abused capacity. Such a mind learning its control over other minds will take the reins into its teeth, and truth alone must take them out and guide it. As of old, this mind works its spell on some manner on all it would harm, because the barriers against evil influences from such a source are not understood by the world in general, and the door is not readily closed against them. To this end, metaphysics are important. Study mind more than matter, and matter less. For we must find refuge in soul to escape the error of the latter days. And mediumship and mesmerism more than all else contribute to a terrible future development of discord. We should strongly insist on the majesty of truth and its control over error, and begin today denying right or reality to aught but God and the true idea, saying, quote, depart from me all ye that work iniquity, end quote, and thus break up the reign of error and let the world of harmony and truth reappear.
Thank you all for joining us today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.